Good afternoon, Tri-States. You are listening to IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading and Information Service for the Blind and Print Handicapped, brought to you in part by DuPaco and the R.W. Hafer Foundation. This is Ken in my Friday reader seat, reading from the Friday, September 23rd edition of the Dubuque Telegraph Herald. And now we have our first piece from above the fold on page 1. District mulls future of middle schools. Community members on Thursday got a look at the current state of the Dubuque Community School District's middle schools, as well as a chance to provide feedback as the district works to determine the facility's future. The district held a meeting to provide an update on the planning process for consolidating the district's middle schools from 3 to 2 by no later than fall 2026, a goal approved by school board members in April. Board members in June approved working with Waterloo, Iowa firm Envision Architecture to lead the study and planning process for the consolidation, which will focus on creating feeder schools to the district's 2 high schools. At Thursday's meeting, Superintendent Amy Hawkins said Envision staff have spent the past 4 months working with a community task force comprised of teachers, administrators, and community members, in addition to meeting with focus groups of parents, students, teachers, and district leaders. This is the first of many community meetings that we're going to have, she said. Laura Peterson, educational planner with Envision, told attendees the firm's staff visited each middle school building and graded the facilities on 6 key factors: building adequacy, safety and security, educational adequacy, site, community and location, and value. From the analysis, Eleanor Roosevelt Middle School received an overall grade of a B+, George Washington Middle School was ranked D+, and Thomas Jefferson Middle School received a D. Peterson stressed the grades do not indicate Washington and Jefferson are providing a subpar education, but rather the buildings do not necessarily support the needs of a 21st century education. It's not a reflection of the education, but there's significant challenges at those 2 facilities, she said. Among those challenges are the building's ages. While Roosevelt was constructed in 2005, Jefferson and Washington were constructed in 1922, although both have seen additions and expansions since then. Those buildings are around 100 years old. And the things that we provided in schools 100 years ago versus what we're providing today are very different, said Bobby Joe Dunneman, an architect with Envision. As an example, Peterson noted that Roosevelt includes a secure entrance where visitors must first pass through a controlled space by the main office before accessing the main building, while Washington and Jefferson do not. Washington and Jefferson are also limited in space, occupying 8.75 acres and 5 acres, respectively, while Roosevelt is housed on 31 acres. Similarly, Roosevelt offers nearly 300 parking spaces, while Washington and Jefferson both have about 100. Peterson told attendees the district's annual cost per student at Roosevelt is approximately $12,800, while annual per-student spending at Washington and Jefferson is about $15,000 and $16,400, respectively. District officials have previously stated the combined enrollment at Jefferson and Washington is similar to that of Roosevelt, but it costs about $3.8 million more in total to operate Jefferson and Washington than it does Roosevelt. Stacy and Justin Kretz, who attended the meeting, have 2 sons in the district, one of whom attends Jefferson. Stacy also attended the school herself and previously worked there as a paraprofessional. From being in the middle school buildings, I think the assessments were very accurate, Stacy said. I really like how they're taking safety into consideration. She worries, however, that if school boundary lines are shifted, some families could face transportation barriers, and parents might struggle to attend school functions such as parent-teacher conferences. During the meeting, Brad Leeper, a partner with Envision, said officials aim to develop a model in which no more than 50% of students would be bused to their middle school. The district currently provides bus transportation to students who live outside a 2-mile radius from their school. Peterson added that in developing 2 middle schools that would feed into the district's high schools, officials hope to avoid changing the district's current high school boundaries, as Dubuque Senior and Hempstead High School's student populations are currently demographically comparable. After the meeting, attendees could ask questions of district and Envision staff and could also leave questions or comments on several large sheets of paper placed around the conference room at the forum. Staff will consider the feedback as the planning process continues. Leeper said officials will hold another community meeting in October, at which they will present options for the best sites in a 2 middle school model after testing the financial and logistical impacts of different sites. Peterson said those sites will include the existing middle schools as well as sites for new construction. "There's no assumption that we're building a new school at a different location right now," she said. Envision staff hope to make a recommendation to the school board by November as to the best way to proceed with the consolidation process. Our next page one piece will put a smile on many faces. Brightbox earns Iowa Restaurant Association honor. The owner of a Dubuque County restaurant will receive the Iowa Restaurant Association's top honor this fall. Mike and Cindy Breitbach of Breitbach Country Dining in Balltown have been selected by the association as the Restaurateurs of the Year. They will be honored during the Iowa Restaurant Association's 27th annual Celebrating Excellence ceremony in November in Des Moines. "Honestly, this is an overdue award for the Breitbach," said Jessica Dunker, president and CEO of the state association. "They have obviously been setting a high standard for what hospitality in the state of Iowa looks like for decades, and we're so excited to be able to honor them this year." Breitbach celebrates its title as the state's oldest food and drinking establishment, having opened in 1852. The Breitbach family has owned the business since 1862, and Mike and Cindy assumed ownership of the restaurant in 1986 after working with Mike's parents and brother. "There's nothing better than to be well thought of, and this award just shows appreciation from our customers and community and everything that takes us to this level," said Cindy Breitbach. "This is a compliment to the people who choose to work with us and for us and have for so long, because without them, it'd be impossible." The restaurant offers a variety of dinner-style favorites, including burgers, fish fillets, sandwiches, pork chops, and homemade pies. Dunker said the Iowa Restaurant Association selects Restaurateurs of the Year who are pillars of the community and exhibit originality, quality, and hospitality for their patrons. Award recipients can be nominated by the public or other members of the restaurant industry. She said the Breitbach were nominated for this year's award by a member of the association's board of directors, which includes restaurant and bar owners, food purveyors, and other industry members across the state. The board's decision to name them Restaurateurs of the Year was unanimous. "Over the last 150 years, Breitbach has always been one of the most consistent things in our state," Dunker said. You can count on that restaurant being there. It's the same restaurant that I've been to, my parents have been to, and my grandparents went to. And if that is not emblematic of what would make a restaurateur of the year, I can't think what would. The establishment's consistency was never displayed more clearly than in 2007 when the building burned to the ground in a fire on Christmas Eve. With help from the community, a new building was constructed and the restaurant reopened in June 2008, only to be destroyed by a second fire that October on the 10-month anniversary of the first fire. Once again, the family and community rebuilt the restaurant, which reopened in August 2009. It's hard to realize that it's been 13 years since then, Cindy said. Day-to-day operations kind of push that out of sight in the rearview mirror. It's not a choice for the faint of heart to be in this business, but our choices of the people who work with us and for us are the only reason that makes it work. Over the years, Brightbox Country Dining has garnered a variety of awards. In 2009, the restaurant earned an America's Classics Award from the James Beard Foundation. And in 2012, the Iowa Pork Producers Association named its pork tenderloin the best in the state. The following year, Brightbox was featured in an award-winning documentary, Spinning Plates. They've been racking up the honors and the awards and the recognition throughout their very long history here in Iowa, said Molly Grover, president and CEO of Dubuque Area Chamber of Commerce. For six generations, Brightbox has been making Iowa's favorite meals from scratch and with lots of love, and this is just another award to add to their recognitions. She described the restaurant as an iconic, legendary establishment that is on many people's bucket list when they visit Dubuque County. This is obviously a great recognition for them, and it also says a lot about the culinary scene and the restaurants and the offerings we have in the Dubuque area, she said. Brightbox has a hometown community feel. It has excellent customer service, and their food is second to none. Our third and final front page piece will also put some smiles on faces. We have a large picture inset with two people speaking, and the caption beneath it reads, they're standing in what would appear to be a grocery kind of area, and the caption reads, Dubuque Food Pantry Executive Director Teresa Caldwell talks with Mike Brannon during an open house at the facility's new location at 1310 White Street in Dubuque on Thursday. The location is the former site of Brannon's business, Brannon Monument Company, which relocated to Key West. And our article, Food Bank Opens New Site. If you walk into Dubuque Food Pantry's new location at the right time, a glimmering rainbow of sorts meets the eye. Technicolor red, orange, green, blue. It's only sunlight reflected through dish soap, but it's a thing of beauty. And for Executive Director Teresa Caldwell, that's kind of the point of the new pantry. That's why you have a beautiful facility, she said. We want to provide dignity to individuals. Dubuque Food Pantry had its formal ribbon cutting Thursday after a soft opening July 1 of its new 4,500 square foot facility at 1310 White Street. It relocated there from the Jackson Street location that had been its home since 1994. True to Caldwell's message, it's brightly lit with yellow walls and two large front windows facing White Street. You need to have a clean place and inventory, and that's why we chose the color, Caldwell said. We're elated to be here. Board members discussed seeking out a new location during a retreat last September with Jason Nesses of Community Foundation of Greater Dubuque. Early on, a priority was placed on space. They needed more of it. Clients would line up outdoors at the Jackson Street location, waiting to pick up groceries when there wasn't enough space indoors, a frequent occurrence. Storage was split between the ground floor and basement, meaning volunteers had to haul supplies upstairs. Board meetings often took place at tables crammed between stock shelves. A lucky break came in late November when a board member walked in with a newspaper ad regarding the sale of the former Brannan Monument building on White Street. Brannan was relocating to a new location itself in the Key West area. The board members came over to the site the next morning at 10 a.m., found out the current owner had a bid for the place that would come due at 1 p.m., huddled in a corner, and then bought the place on the spot. Online property records indicate that the pantry purchased the property for $310,000. From there came 3 months of planning and another 3 months of renovations at a cost of $166,000. The sale of the former food pantry building to Dubuque Rescue Mission, who will use it as a drop-in and heating cooling center, helped cover the renovation. So did City and County American Rescue Plan Act funding, as well as several generous donations and community support. Everybody has something to say about how they made it happen, said Dubuque City Council member Laura Russell at the pantry shortly before the ribbon cutting. I painted, she added loudly. For Nices, it was a charmed sequence of events. It's all happenstance, he said. The right property happened to be there. The money happened to be there. The right board members happened to be there. In the new space, everything is more or less on one floor, with ramps between different levels to make it handicap accessible. Volunteers transported the pantry's freezers and walk-in cold storage to the new address. And there's Caldwell's favorite addition, a produce cooler stationed at the back of the store that she called the pantry's signature piece. Access to produce is a point of pride for Caldwell, who made it a priority when she took over as executive director in 2016. That is a place a lot of low-income people pass by because it's too expensive, she said. The pantry obtains at least 3,000 pounds of produce a month. There's also plans to plant raised gardens in the front of the property in the spring. The expanded space also makes the food pantry different from many of its peers. While clients pick up a pre-packed bag of groceries at many pantries, clients can pick up their own groceries with a volunteer's help at Dubuque Food Pantry. It's a very human way, just like a grocery store, Miller said. You don't want Hy-Vee to throw a bag at you. Perhaps most significantly, it's only a few blocks from its old location, so it can still serve the many clients who used to walk to the Jackson Street location. We're still in the neighborhood, and that's what's important, said Pantry Board President Margaret Wick. In its first couple of months, the pantry broke its record for attendance in July by a few hundred people and came close to breaking its record in August. There is significant food insecurity in Dubuque, including a recent increase Caldwell attributes to state cuts to food stamp benefits in April. Remember, there's a reason that Caldwell wants this space to be welcoming. I try to tell them, don't feel bad, Caldwell said. Everyone needs a helping hand every once in a while. Now we turn to news from Dubuque and the tri-states. Joe Davies County Democrats hopeful. From Galena. Joe Davies County Democrats gathered Thursday night in Galena for their annual fall fundraiser, featuring a field of state and national candidates, all hopeful, but acknowledging the party's area challenges this year. Joe Davies County was redistricted into Illinois' new 16th congressional district, one of just a few Republican-leaning districts in the state, after 10 years under incumbent U.S. Representative Sherry Bustos, Democrat Illinois, in the current district. The new district offers incumbent U.S. Representative Darren LaHood, Republican Illinois, on the other side of the contest, in an oddly shaped district stretching down to Peoria. Thursday night served as the Joe Davies County public debut of Lisa Hatterlin, the Democrat running against LaHood in the general election. The Harvard City Council member and land conservation nonprofit leader was not on ballots in the June primary. No Democrat was. That is part of what spurred Hatterlin's run. We can't let any Republican who's been part of this effort to undermine a fair election run unopposed, she said in an interview. He ultimately voted to certify, but only after insurrectionists arrived, before he joined the Texas lawsuit. And I think there are enough issues going on in the country right now, especially in Washington, that people want that choice. Hatterlin acknowledged that her 21-county district was weighted heavily toward Republicans, saying the split was about 70-30 in their favor. But she said she believes and hopes voters who are turned away by farther-right Republican policies in Congress want someone who works across the aisle, as she said she has in heavily Republican McHenry County, even as an out-of-the-closet Democrat. I know how to set things aside and find something we can work together on, she said. I would like to think that there are enough people out there who, regardless of party, would want someone to represent them who actually wants to strengthen their rights and not take them away regarding abortion access. Slightly more than half of the voters are women. During her speech to the crowd of about 70 at the DeSoto House Hotel in Galena, Hatterlin referred to LaHood as a second-generation Washington insider who votes lockstep with the most extreme MAGA Republicans. Joe Davies GOP chair Mike Dittmar said that did not sound like the LaHood he knew from his group's Lincoln Day dinner. He comes from a pedigree line of service, he said, but he didn't mention Donald Trump, MAGA, or far-right issues at all. He stuck to kitchen table issues like the economy. During an interview after the event, Gerald Podraza of Apple River, the Democrat facing incumbent Illinois Representative Andrew Chesney, Republican Freeport, for Illinois' 45th Senate District, shared his plans to invest in industrial hemp and local farming as rural economic development. Before our second piece on the Dubuque and Tri-State page, you do have a large picture of a smartly dressed gentleman. He's dressed in a gray sport coat and gray slacks, reading in a comfortable chair in a window of what looks like a bookstore. And it is called Significant Chapter, and beneath it is the caption, "Writer John J. McAndrew of Dubuque reads Thursday at River Lights Bookstore as part of the Dubuque Shop's Banned Books Week." That's a significant week, Banned Books Week. I think people should have access to every book that's out there, if they want to read them. Our second piece from this page, "Price to Replace County's Heating Cooling System Uncomfortable." Results are in from a study commissioned by the Dubuque County Board of Supervisors to investigate a possible replacement of the HVAC systems at the county courthouse and jail to the tune of $3 million to $4 million. The current system is geothermal and pumps water around the courthouse to heat and cool. Just installed in 2016 for $550,000, officials say it is disturbingly loud and so temperamental it is dysfunctional. The current system also does not replace air in the courthouse, which was identified as a health hazard during the COVID-19 pandemic. So, the Board of Supervisors allocated the first portion of the nearly $19 million the county received from the American Rescue Plan Act to study the need and the county's options to replace the systems. Monica Sargent of Shive Hattery Incorporated Architecture and Engineering said the study found the same problems. They are very noisy, she told the Board of Supervisors on Monday. People will shut off the units so they can talk on the phone or even hold court. When they shut them off, the rooms will heat up or get cold. The Board of Supervisors routinely shut the system in their chamber off to hear each other speak, as Supervisor Ann McDonough shared with Sargent. The systems are turned off in this room so I can hear you, she said. We have towels hanging out of the system in the corner trying to dampen the air. It isn't about aesthetics. McDonough said her concerns are doubled regarding the courtroom's conditions. This is the seat of criminal justice and justice in Dubuque County, and it doesn't work, she said. Judges bring up the cool so the heat won't be too bad, then encourage jurors to bring coats and sweaters and scarves. Imagine being a defendant when the jury is freezing or intolerably hot. Supervisor Jay Wickham wondered if those conditions could be bad for the health of the building and its inhabitants. We've identified the comfort issues, but do we have risks related to health and ventilation, too? Too cold and too hot, causing damage to the facility? He asked. Sargent said there were no risks to the buildings, but that there were to those inside, due to no outside air being brought in to replace air inside. Any type of aerosols people breathe, just stay in the building, she said. People won't want to stay in the buildings in such poor conditions. But, Sargent said, the study showed no easy fix to the problem. Replacing the system with another of its kind, which the building is piped for, would leave the noise issue at least. Another option is a variant refrigerant flow system, where you run refrigerant through the building and that provides the heating and cooling rather than water, she said. You would install smaller units, which are very quiet, in each room. But that would require replacing the plumbing in both buildings. Shive Hattery was not asked to find hard costs for the project. Sargent, though, said similar past projects cost more than $3 million. Dubuque County Auditor Kevin Drogato said he would bring an order to an upcoming Board of Supervisors meeting to contract further design with detailed costs. Then, he said, he would bring a proposal for the replacement during the annual budgeting process. Now we turn to our opinion page and Friday's Our View Quick Takes, representing the editorial point of view of our Telegraph Herald editors. And again, we have three smiley faces. Starting us off, 1996 First Citizen contributed in myriad ways. When Jan Hess was honored with the Telegraph Herald's First Citizen Award for 1996, the accolade followed achievements that were many, varied, and significant. We remember her fondly and reflect on her efforts after her death last week at the age of 84. The First Citizen Award recognizes achievement, leadership, and a commitment to make a significant contribution to the tri-state community and its people. Hess met all the criteria well. In addition to her professional responsibilities as personnel administrator for Dubuque County, she served as volunteer chair of the county's Sesquicentennial Commission, culminating with Iowa's 150th birthday observances. But her leadership and service were not confined to 1996. Hess served as management chair of Dubuque Area Labor Management Council, served on the Mercy Health Center Board, was a past president of Dubuque Area Congregations United, and a board member of Dubuque Community Food Pantry. And she served as a member of the board of Substance Abuse Services Center. Her affiliation with that organization was particularly significant. In the 1970s, alcoholism nearly made Hess's subsequent achievements an impossibility. It's inspiring that she got help and went on to become not only a positive member, but a leader in the community. A heartfelt thank you to Hess for serving the community so well and inspiring others along the way. Our next smiley face, When a grassroots community event sees hundreds of people pulling together each year to raise money to help fight life-threatening illnesses impacting children, that's a valiant and meaningful effort. When that effort raises hundreds of thousands of dollars annually, that's nice. That nice idea moves into the stratosphere on the scale of impressive. Such is the case with Research for the Kids, inspired by Sarah Reese's battle with brain cancer, which took her life at 22, and Matthew Wessels, a young family member of the Reese family, who was diagnosed with a congenital heart defect that will require lifelong monitoring. Family members turned their pain and grief into an effort to contribute to medical research in a big way. This year, that local event supporting the University of Iowa Stead Family Children's Hospital raised $344,110. Since 2009, the generous donations of Research for the Kids supporters have given nearly $2.5 million to the cause, raised through a poker run, affiliated auctions, and other efforts. Hearty hugs and high fives to the Research for the Kids organizers, volunteers, and donors for turning tragedy into triumph in supporting the Children's Hospital's research into brain tumors and heart defects. And now our third smiley face. There's nothing like civic-minded young people to restore your faith in the next generation, and students at three area high schools have proven to be thusly engaged. Central Community School in Elkader, Marquette Catholic High School in Bellevue, and Clayton Ridge High School in Guttenberg received the Kerry Chapman Cat Award, presented by Iowa Secretary of State Paul Pate, given to schools in which at least 90% of the eligible students are registered to vote. It's a great recognition to claim the award, named in honor of Kat, an Iowan who was a leader in the fight for women's suffrage and helped secure passage of the 19th Amendment granting women the right to vote. Given our country's abysmal voter turnout in most elections, it's great to see these high school students making a serious effort to engage in the political process and appreciate the right and privilege of voting. Cheers to the students of Marquette, Clayton Ridge, and Guttenberg. Great examples of citizenship for all schools to emulate. You are listening to Iris, the Iowa Radio Reading and Information Service for the Blind and Print Handicapped. This is Ken, and I have been and will continue reading from the Friday, September 23rd edition of the Dubuque Telegraph Herald. And now we turn to today's obituaries. Mary E. Seitz, Dyersville. Mary E. Seitz, 85, of Dyersville, passed away Tuesday, September 20th, just minutes before her birthday. Happy birthday in heaven, Mom. Visitation will be held from 2 to 7 p.m. Sunday, September 25th, at Kramer Funeral Home in Dyersville. The Catholic Daughters of America will recite a rosary at 4 p.m. Visitation will continue at the funeral home on Monday from 9 to 10 a.m. prior to funeral mass. A massive Christian burial will be held at 10:30 a.m. Monday, September 26th at St. Francis Xavier Basilica in Dyersville, with burial in the church cemetery. Reverend Philip will officiate. Mary was born September 21st, 1936, in Dubuque County, the daughter of Bernard and Carletta Kramer Osterhaus. She married John A. Seitz on October 7th, 1961, in Dyersville. She was a homemaker and volunteered at the hospital, the Ellen Kennedy Living Center, Beckman High School, St. Francis Xavier Basilica, and with the Catholic Daughters of America. She worked at Riker Shoes for many years. Kramer Funeral Home in Dyersville is assisting the family, and information is available at www.kramerfuneral.com. Online condolences and memorials may be sent to Kramer Funeral Home, 750 12th Avenue Southwest, Dyersville, Iowa, 52040. Janice M. Hancock, Shellsburg. Janice M. Hancock, 76, of Shellsburg, died on Monday, September 19th. Visitation will be held from 10 to 10:45 a.m. Saturday, October 1st, at Centenary United Methodist Church in Shellsburg, where services will follow. Burial will take place in Evergreen Cemetery in Shellsburg. Erickson Funeral Home of Darlington is assisting the family. Walter W. Paisley III, Bankston, Iowa. Walter W. Paisley III, 76, of Bankston, died on Wednesday, September 21st. Visitation will be held from 4 to 7 p.m. Tuesday, September 27th, at Rife Funeral Home in Epworth. Services will take place at 10:30 a.m. Wednesday, September 28th, at St. Clement's Catholic Church in Bankston. Burial will be in the church cemetery. Ronald Preby, McChesney Park, Illinois. Ronald passed away early Thursday, September 1st. Ronald was survived by his wife, Connie, and his children, and his special granddaughter. And we do have a few new arrivals today. And we have on Monday, September 19th, Graw. Kyle and Tina Graw of Dubuque, a girl at Unity Point Health Finley Hospital, Dubuque. And on Wednesday, September 21st, Amos, James Amos Jr., and Callie Amos of Dubuque, a boy at Mercy One Dubuque Medical Center. And McClure, Scott and Amy McClure of Dubuque, a girl at Finley. Welcome, little ones, to an interesting world, and I hope an exciting one for all of you. We have a few pieces of local news in brief here. On this page, first one, Dubuque man accused of string of burglaries at storage facilities. A Dubuque man is accused of committing a string of burglaries at a Dubuque storage facility. Daniel D. Schemmel, 35, of 1903 and a half Jackson Street, was arrested at 4:47 p.m. Wednesday at 1120 Romberg Avenue on 6 counts of third-degree burglary, 3 counts of fifth-degree criminal mischief, and 1 count of second-degree theft. Court documents state that police responded to Dubuque Storage, 11114 Iowa 3, on September 12th to investigate the theft of a catalytic converter and fishing poles, as well as damage to a camper, all of which totaled $3,775. Surveillance footage showed two vehicles pulling up at about 2:55 a.m., and Schemmel walking toward the camper and a storage unit, documents state. At about 5:10 a.m., documents state, Schemmel is seen cutting the lock on two other storage units. Schemmel and a woman who is not named in documents walked into one of them. Schemmel then walked out with fishing poles valued at $600. At about 8 a.m., Schemmel enters another unit. Later, $100 worth of items were reported missing from it. Schemmel enters another storage unit at about 9 a.m., documents state. Later, he places an ATV sprayer in his vehicle. The sprayer, along with other missing items from the unit, were valued at $2,020. The footage showed Schemmel entering one more storage unit before driving away at about 9:40 a.m. Documents state that Schemmel admitted to committing some of the burglaries and had stolen items in his possession. Captain Ryan Kramer of the Dubuque County Sheriff's Department said the investigation into the incident is ongoing. One injured in rear-end crash in Dubuque. One person was injured Wednesday in a rear-end crash in Dubuque. Ashley A. Cunningham, 35, of Palo, Iowa, was injured but not taken by ambulance to a hospital for treatment, according to a crash report. The crash occurred at about 10:10 a.m. Wednesday at the intersection of Clark Drive and Asbury Road. The report states that Cunningham was traveling west on Clark in front of Heaven H. Conley, 17, of Sherrill. Cunningham stopped at the intersection's stop sign to wait for traffic, and Conley rear-ended Cunningham. Conley was cited with failure to maintain control of her vehicle. Police, one injured after driver runs stop sign in Dubuque. Police said one person was injured Wednesday after a driver ran a stop sign in Dubuque. Brianna E. Gable, 17, of Dubuque, was injured but not taken by ambulance to a hospital for treatment, according to a crash report. The crash occurred at about 5:05 p.m. Wednesday at the intersection of St. Ambrose Street and Rosedale Avenue. The report states that Gable was southbound on St. Ambrose, while Alice L. Erskpik, 75, of Dubuque, was eastbound on Rosedale. The report states that Erspec ran a stop sign at the intersection, hitting Gable. Erspec was cited with failure to obey a stop or yield sign. East Dubuque City Treasurer resigns. East Dubuque's City Treasurer resigned this week. City Council members accepted the resignation of Joan Mai at their meeting, according to City Manager Loris Herrick. He said Mai had held the position for 17 years. She did not give a reason for her resignation. Herrick said city officials will begin advertising for the position immediately and hope to fill it as soon as possible. An interesting piece from the Lifestyle Arts page that is significant for Dubuque, Capturing Dubuque. Bluff Strokes Pline Art Paint Out set for return after a two-year hiatus. Artists from across the country will converge upon Dubuque to capture its landscapes, architecture, and other unique elements early next month. After a two-year hiatus due to the COVID-19 pandemic, Bluff Strokes Pline Art Paint Air Paint Out will make its return beginning Sunday, October 2nd, and continuing through Saturday, October 8th. Approximately 60 artists will participate, according to organizers, including creators from Iowa, Illinois, Wisconsin, Indiana, Kansas, Kentucky, Michigan, Minnesota, and Missouri. And we have a couple of inset pictures. One of them, a lady painting on a canvas outside of the old sash door building. Liz Wall of Chicago paints an area of Jackson Street in 2018. Wall was one of more than 60 artists taking part in the Bluff Strokes' third annual Plein Air Out. And another picture, a person, umbrella overhead, painting on a canvas, sitting on a pile of rubble. It's so it looks, but it's actually, I believe, along the river. And that caption reads, Jean Holdener of Dubuque paints during the Bluff Strokes Plein Air Plein Art Paint Out at the Port of Dubuque in 2016. Again, this year's event begins on October 2nd. All arrive with a common goal in mind, to create art as a community and to capture the various perspectives Dubuque has to offer. Whether they're painting a scenic overlook, boats or the waters of the Mississippi River, the rolling hills, a farm, or historic buildings downtown, Dubuque is unique in that we have it all, said Jelaine Pinchuk, co-chair of Bluff Strokes. It's an attractive place for artists to paint with all of the options. Plein air painting, or painting outdoors in open air rather than in a studio, came into practice in the 19th century. The past 20 years have seen a resurgence, particularly in the United States. Bluff Strokes was founded in 2014 by Dubuque resident Wes Heitzman as an affiliate of the Dubuque County Fine Arts Society. Between 2015 and 2019, the organization hosted 10 2-to-5-day workshops led by prominent plein air painters for local artists to hone their skills. It also launched the Dubuque Plein Air Painters in 2016, along with the Plein Air Paint Out. While no workshops are planned this year, Bluff Strokes organizers intend to resume them in 2023. Bluff Strokes grew out of the desire to support local art and artists, Heisman said. But there is a growing community of artists who travel for events and workshops. Being able to attract them to Dubuque to capture our rich environment and to bring awareness to everything we have to offer is something that can bolster the area as an arts community and destination. Another goal of the organization is to acquaint young professionals with art, building their exposure and perhaps even establishing their relationship with it. We had one young woman who attended our art sale a previous year who had never been to an art opening before. She said, "I never knew that going to an art opening could make me cry," Heitzman said. "So I think we play an important role in helping expose young people to art. There are many who might be buying their first painting with us. Prize money, ranging from $100 to $2,000, will be awarded to selected artists painting from 8 categories. They include outside the box, poetic or inspired by poetry as it relates to the artist's vision, Mississippi Overlook, Riverfront, Historic Dubuque, Working Dubuque, Arboretum Garden, and Rural Scene. Events to help drive the artist's inspiration include a nocturne paint beginning at 5 p.m., Tuesday, October 4th, for which the lights of downtown Dubuque businesses have been requested to remain on. The city of Dubuque has proclaimed it Dubuque's inaugural Night of Lights. Another highlight will be a 3-hour quick paint from 8:30 to 11:30 a.m. Wednesday, October 5th, in the area of Steeple Square. The week will culminate in a patron party from 6 to 9 p.m. Friday, October 7th, at Steeple Square, 101 East 15th Street. It will feature heavy hors d'oeuvres, wine, beer from Jubeck New World Brewing, and live music from Dubuque classical and jazz guitarist Marcus DeJesus. Additionally, paintings will be judged by Milwaukee artist Lauren Wiley. Tickets are $125 for 2 people to attend, but $100 of that goes toward the purchase of a painting, Pinchuk said. Another draw for the artists who have attended Bluff Strokes in previous years is how well they do in terms of art sales. A public sale of the paintings created throughout the week also will take place from 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. Saturday, October 8th. Sherry Thomas, an artist from Larson, Wisconsin, has participated in Bluff Strokes Plain Art Paint Out since its inception. She said, Heitzman said, seeing artists return for Bluff Strokes is validating. But he also revels in watching new creators take in Dubuque and capture it on canvas for the first time. There is something special about seeing a community that many of us are familiar with and surrounded by every day from the fresh perspective of an artist who maybe has never been here before, Heitzman said. It's very exciting to see what they might capture. Now we continue with some more of our news in brief from around the pages of the paper. First one, Dubuque County Health Team recommends COVID-19 booster shots. The Dubuque County Public Health Incident Management Team is recommending that residents get the updated bivalent COVID-19 booster to improve their protection from severe COVID-19 illness. The recommendation is for all county residents who are at least 12 years old. These new boosters contain an updated bivalent formula that both boosts immunity against the original coronavirus strain and protects against the newer Omicron variants that account for most current cases and are predicted to continue circulating this fall and winter, a press release states. Updated boosters are intended to provide optimal protection against the virus and address waning vaccine effectiveness over time. Local health officials noted that residents can get the updated booster at the same time as they receive their flu shot. The release notes that after the Food and Drug Administration approved updated booster formulas for both Pfizer and Moderna, the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention recently recommended the new boosters for people who received their previous COVID-19 shots at least 2 months earlier. The Pfizer booster is recommended for anyone who is at least 12 years old, while the Moderna booster is recommended for those 18 and older. A list of Dubuque County providers offering the boosters can be found at dubuquecounty.org/sleevesup. Asbury Boy, recognized nationally for selling art to donate to charity. An Asbury 12-year-old's effort to raise money for charity by selling his artwork has been recognized nationally. Arsh Pal has been named an honoree of the 2022 Gloria Barron Prize for Young Heroes, according to a press release. He was among the 25 people recognized out of 500 applicants from across the U.S. and Canada. Each year, the Barron Prize celebrates 25 inspiring young leaders, 15 top winners, and 10 honorees who have made a significant positive impact on people, their communities, and the environment, the release states. Arsh was recognized for Art by Arsh, an initiative he launched at age 8 as a way for him to sell his artwork to raise money for charities. The release states that Arsh raised more than $15,000 for charities, including St. Jude's Children's Research Hospital and Make-A-Wish Foundation. The release states that Arsh also teaches painting at a local nursing home and teaches art classes for children. My parents always tell me, everyone lives for themselves. You can live for others. Arsh said in the release, that motivates me. And I know that every small step and contribution will make a big difference. This marks the second significant honor for Arsh since this summer. In July, he was among more than 180 children and young people worldwide who received the Diana Award for 2022. The prestigious humanitarian award was established in memory of Princess Diana. Accounting firm will acquire two additional Iowa offices. A Dubuque accounting firm will acquire two additional Iowa offices, Honkamp Kruger & Company PC, 2345 John F. Kennedy Road, recently announced it will acquire the Cedar Falls and Parkersburg offices of Gosling & Company PC on November 1st. The terms of the deal were not disclosed. We are very excited about the upcoming acquisition of Gosling & Company's Cedar Falls and Parkersburg offices, said Honkamp Kruger CEO Greg Burbach in the release. Their firm has a great reputation in Northeast Iowa and has a close cultural fit with HK. We both believe in serving clients with a personal touch while helping them be more profitable. It's a great addition to HK's presence and investment in Northeast Iowa. The Gosling & Company offices in Edgewood, Independence, Manchester, Waterloo, and Waverly are not included in the deal. Temporary library branch location slated to open next week in Farley. A temporary location of the Farley branch of Dubuque County Library District is set to open next week. The temporary branch location will open at 9 a.m. Tuesday, September 27th. In a portion of Farley Municipal Building, 206 First Street North. The library entrance will be located on the north side of the building, and parking will be available on the north and west sides of the building, according to a press release. Library hours will be 3 to 7 p.m. Monday, 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. Tuesday, 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. Wednesday, 3 to 7 p.m. Thursday, 2 to 6 p.m. Friday, and 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. Saturday. The branch location has a collection of 5,000 books, DVDs, and audiobooks, the release states. The book drop for after-hours returns will be located outside of the municipal building. Two computers also will be available for public use. In-person programming will be offered in the council chambers of the municipal building, the release states. Details on upcoming programming can be found at DUBCOLIB, that's dubcolib.org. The Farley branch of the library district at Drexler Middle School closed in July 2021 after the Western Dubuque Community School Board rescinded the agreement for the library to operate there. Library services have been offered twice per week in Farley while library and Farley officials looked for both a temporary and a permanent location. Information sought about UTV theft in East Dubuque. Authorities seek information about a utility vehicle that was stolen from East Dubuque, then driven into Wisconsin and through Dubuque. The Joe Davies County Sheriff's Department reported that the white Bobcat 3400 side-by-side single cab UTV was taken from a lot near US 20 and Badger Road in East Dubuque at about 11:15 p.m. Tuesday. It went to a nearby location for about 4 hours before being driven up Badger Road and into Wisconsin at about 3 a.m. Wednesday. The vehicle then traveled through Dubuque on US 61 151, continuing on US 61 toward Maquoketa. The Sheriff's Department reported that the UTV might have been taken into the area of Lost Nation and Oxford Junction, Iowa, that morning as well. Anyone with information on the theft should call the Joe Davies County Sheriff's Department at 815-777-2141. Rexco Equipment to acquire J.P. Sherman from Farley. A Farley equipment dealer will be acquired by the end of this month. J.P. Sherman will be acquired by Rexco Equipment, a heavy and compact construction equipment dealer, effective at the close of business on Friday, September 30th, according to a press release. This will mark Rexco's seventh location in Iowa. The release states that Rexco will retain J.P. Sherman's employees. The Farley location will continue to sell Bobcat, Kuhn, Kuhn Knight, Exmark, and Supreme equipment with the addition of Link Belt Cranes, Bandit, Link Belt Excavators, and Benke Trailers. J.P. Sherman was founded in 1919 as J.P. Sherman's Garage and Implements. Dyersville business closes after 16-year stint. A longtime Dyersville business recently closed. Finest Grains, Natural and Organic Products, 635 16th Avenue Southeast, closed after 16 years in business. Owner Deanna Cooey founded Finest Grains as an extension of her passion for healthy eating. Believing in the health benefits of natural and organic foods, she wanted to make those types of meals available to her community. In a final post on the business's Facebook page, she thanked her friends and customers, and it has been an amazing 16 years, and I am so thankful to have had the opportunity to meet and serve so many outstanding people. And now we'll conclude with our weekend buzz. All the noteworthy things to do this weekend. Guttenberg German Fest today and Saturday. Various Guttenberg sites, 3 to 10 p.m. today, 7:30 a.m. to 11 p.m. Saturday. Wow, that brings us to the end of today's reading. That would be September 23rd, reading of the Dubuque Telegraph Herald, brought to you by IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading and Information Service for the blind and print handicapped. And this has been Ken in the regular Friday reader seat, wishing you a wonderful and much cooler weekend ahead. Take care, and you'll hear back from me in another week. So long.